This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thank you so much for joining us again. There was a study that just came out showing that dads tend to pay more attention to and are more responsive to their young daughters than they are to their young sons. And I immediately thought about how many stories we've seen in the news in the last few years about the culture war on boys. Now, in reality, boys need to be trained to grow up as honorable men, and that job starts in childhood. My next guest says we need to help boys embrace honorable ideals, which she says can be found in the Knight's Code of Chivalry. So joining me now is Heather Hopp. She is a writer and conference speaker, as well as a homeschooling mom. And today we'll be talking about her book, Knights in Training. And so good to have you here, Heather. How are you?
I am doing really well. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Tell us a little bit about you and how you became concerned about the need to raise boys with a code of chivalry of sorts.
I would say it started a few years after I had kids. I actually was a tomboy growing up, so when I found out my oldest was going to be a boy, I was super excited and thinking, I've got this. I'm about as close to a boy as you could get. And then fast forward 3 years later, I'm taking a deep breath and I have three boys in my arms. And I'm looking down going, these little babies and toddlers are totally different than me.
Yeah.
And I quickly realized that I needed to understand them if I wanted to reach their heart and if I wanted to really raise them in a way that they grew up embracing purpose and meaning and moved out successfully into the world. So I was looking around with alarm, seeing the number of men that were just sort of having that failure to launch and going, no, this that's not what I want for my son.
Exactly. What do you think it is that kind of leads into this problem of the failure to launch, where you have so many boys who aren't growing up really with a sense of who they are and the sense of who they're supposed to be and a sense of honor? What do you think are some of the holes in the system as we're living it out now?
Yeah, well, I honestly think we don't understand them. And because boys are raised primarily, mothers are the primary caregivers, and then we send them to school where the primary teachers and influences in their life are women, we don't understand that they're different. And so there's a temptation to look and go, oh, they're dysfunctional. Well, they're not dysfunctional girls, they're boys.
Yep.
And so when our culture is saying, you know, sit still, pay attention, stop fidgeting, be less active, and oh my gosh, do not turn that stick into a sword or a gun, we squash them. We squash them before they have a chance to even get started.
Yes.
And so they will turn to video games as an outlet to find meaning because boys, they want to be the hero. They want their lives to matter. And if the people around them are telling them that there's always something wrong with them, they're going to look for other outlets to find meaning, or they just tend to shut down altogether, which is why we're seeing boys really struggling in school.
Absolutely. Yeah, nothing could be further from the truth. I have three girls and a boy, and I always said when they were very, very little, it's the boy who is physically challenging, it's the girls who are emotionally challenging, but they're not the same. They're definitely not the same, and they have different needs. What would you say are the primary things? You mentioned that boys want to be heroes, and boys have different things that motivate them and directions they're going. But what would you say primarily sets boys apart from girls in terms of what interests them, what motivates them, and where they really need to go?
Yeah. Well, they're motivated by action. They're motivated by a sense of purpose. And so for our young daughters, they have a desire to please. They have a desire, I mean, not all the time, but in general, that desire to please the adults in their life. They want to make those adults, those teachers proud of them. Whereas a boy, if they don't see a purpose in it, they're just like, why?
Right.
You know, what would I even, why would I choose to engage and spend energy here? And so, speaking of energy, they just tend to have a lot more of it, and they physically need to move. And when they engage their bodies, their minds are able to engage in a deeper way, which is why we need to embrace their need to move, and which is where, like, their pretend play. And when they go in and they turn that stick into a sword and they're having sword battles, they're not on track to be a violent psychopath. They're actually working out, especially for providing them good stories and good heroes, they're working out in their mind, what does it mean to be the hero? What does it mean to make a difference? And do I have what it takes? And they're practicing that.
It's true.
And so we need to change the way we're thinking and realize that what they're going to do is going to be a whole lot more active, and we need to be giving them whys and a vision.
Yeah. Now, this brings us up to the subject that you're writing about in the book, which is knights in training and the whole concept of the knight. This is an old medieval concept. Obviously, we all have read about knights and so forth. But how was it that this particular concept came upon your radar as being relevant to your boys' lives?
Yeah, well, it started with getting some books from the library and reading about knights, and my boys were mesmerized. And so they're having sword battles all around me, and I'm looking at them going, oh, yeah, and we're going to talk about chivalry, because I want my boys to know how to treat a woman with dignity and respect.
Okay.
And so I started researching it, because I'm a little bit of a research nut, and what I discovered really blew me away. Chivalry is so much more than how a man treats a woman. So we've just, in modern times, actually this started in the Victorian era, we sort of distilled all of chivalry down to treat women with respect and open doors. And that sort of makes it shallow.
Yeah.
Not that those things are bad, but that's just a tiny portion of what chivalry was. And it was this whole ethos. It was a whole way of living that really typified an ideal knight. And this whole idea of chivalry shaped how a boy was trained during his days as a page and then a squire and then graduating to full knighthood. So it was formative in shaping who he was then, and then they would use these ideals of chivalry to draw the grizzled knights back and say, oh, you've strayed.
Oh, wow.
You've strayed, brother. You need to come back. This is who you are, not what you're doing right now. And so really it was a way of extending grace.
Yeah.
Like, yep, we messed up. But it also really pointed towards an ideal. And as I read about these, I mean, it's speak the truth at all times. You know, be the brave one that comes clean. Don't go the safe path of trying to protect yourself to the detriment of others.
Right.
Defend and protect the weak. Protect, you know, respect the honor of women. Don't offend. Persevere and pursue excellence. And I'm looking at all of these. I'm looking at the modern state of boyhood, and I'm going, yeah, I want my boys to persevere.
Good.
That's not something that we commonly see right now.
No.
I want my boys to pursue everything with excellence. And above all, I want them to do things because they love God. And so in the days of chivalry, love for God was the foundation for everything else. And so that was the first aspect of the Knight's Code of Chivalry. And so I'm looking at this going, oh my goodness, here's a roadmap for me.
Exactly.
This is going to help me stay on track. And so as I'm in the nitty-gritty daily life of mothering, of parenting, it's just sort of a reminder to look at the big picture and a reminder that I'm here to train them. And then for them, as we embrace this idea of knight training, they were really excited to embark on it from the beginning, and it gave us this common language. So now we talk about it and we refer back to it, and it's given them this sense of identity.
Wow, that's so neat. And it's neat to be able to understand that you're not the first mother who ever said, I really want to build character into my boys, that this was something that was very important to past generations. And your boys, as you say in the book, really grabbed on to this idea, didn't they? They love this idea of being a knight.
Right, because they want to be the hero. And now I'm giving them not only permission to be the hero right now, I'm not only casting a vision like you can be the hero someday when you walk out into manhood, but we're talking about just like making it practical. How can you embody this right now? And that's just, again, I tapped into their desire for adventure and their desire for purpose and meaning.
I love that. Well, I want to talk about some of these 10 principles for raising honorable, courageous, and compassionate boys with Heather Haupt. Her book is called Knights in Training, and we'll return on Janet Mefford Today right after this.
Here is today's Capitol Hill Brief with Concerned Women for America President Penny Nance.
If you care about the sanctity of life, I want to encourage you to read Feisty and Feminine, A Rallying Cry for Conservative Women. I believe we're on the cusp of big gains in this area, and for the good of our nation, we need to be all hands on deck. Time magazine recently said that although abortion rights activists won an epic victory in Roe v. Wade, they've been losing ever since. That is no accident. Roe was decided in 1973. Concerned Women for America started in 1978. That means we've been fighting this evil abortion for almost 40 years. So let us equip you and give you the tools you need to join the fight for life.
Penny Nance's latest book, Feisty and Feminine, empowers Christian women to engage the culture. And it's our gift to thank you for your donation today. Request yours at CapitolHillBrief.org. That's CapitolHillBrief.org.
Do you want to experience a closer relationship with God today? Sometimes growing in intimacy with God can seem out of our reach or something we have to work hard to achieve. Well, the good news is God desires intimacy with you more than you could ever imagine. This is Jeannie Nigro with Unshaken. If you want to grow closer to God, you simply need to think what He thinks and feel what He feels about everything, starting with yourself. It's impossible to experience intimacy with God when you're down on yourself, beating yourself up for not being perfect, or just plain thinking negatively about yourself, because that's not how He sees you. God is for you. He delights in you. You're beautiful to Him even in your weakness. See yourself as God sees you, and you'll grow closer to Him today. For more on how to remain unshaken in a world that's all shook up, go to jeannienigro.com. That's JeanNNENIGRO.com. That's jeannienigro.com.
We are back on Janet Mefford today, and for those of us who have raised boys or are in the process of raising boys, we understand that we want them to grow up to be courageous and compassionate and honorable. And my guest, Heather Haupt, her book is called Knights in Training. She has discovered some great principles for making that happen. And Heather, one of the things that you say, and you start off with this, is the very first principle, and we touched on this a little bit in the previous segment, and that is to love God. As you say, love for God recognizes that there is something and someone who is transcendent. What is the importance of that? Why is it so crucial for us to start there in building good boys?
Right. Well, again, it comes back to their desire for purpose and meaning and why. And so they need to know, and the knights of old needed to know this, that there was someone outside of themselves, someone outside of society and humanity that was there and overseeing it, and they saw the big picture, and that they were 100% for them, and that there were standards, because otherwise we're just at the whim of whoever's in charge, and whoever's in charge gets to make the rules, and that's where we, you know, we're put under tyrannical rulers, and things start to go really bad. And so we need this moral compass, and that's actually why the whole idea of chivalry and this knight training began in the first place in the Middle Ages, is they recognized that a warrior without this kind of moral compass would quickly become a mercenary, hiring himself out to the highest bidder and doing who knows what. And so this, when we recognize God, His role in creation, His role in our lives, it gives us a sense of purpose. It helps us to recognize that there's something outside of ourselves. And understanding God and His work in creation helps us to recognize and appreciate humanity.
Yes.
And that people are created in the image of God. And that's where the rest of the code comes into play.
Okay.
And when you understand that, it makes everything else easier.
Yeah, and this kind of leads into the next principle where you talk about obedience, to obey. You talk about the need to recognize and obey authority. If you understand that you're under God's authority, then that will give you a framework for understanding further authority. What should that look like, though? How do you inculcate in your boys this respect for authority? What sorts of things do you do as a mom to pass that on to them?
Yeah, well, again, for us, a game changer was when we embraced this whole idea of knight training. I realized that there were realms of authority, and that in our home, that my husband and I were the king and queen of the home realm. And it was our job to be benevolent rulers and to be guiding and directing and keeping an eye out for the health of our kingdom.
Good.
And the continuation of our kingdom. And then we talk to the boys about this. So who's the king of the house? Dad is. Who's the queen? Mom. You know, and so we've talked to them about the importance of our role in their lives and how our job is to prepare them to one day rule their own realms. And so again, we're connecting their need to obey now with something down the road in the future.
Yeah.
And so even when they disagree with decisions we make, we're like, well, we get to call the shots now. And when you are an adult, you get to make your own decisions.
Yes.
And you might make some choices that are different than ours, and you're going to have the freedom and opportunity to do that then.
Yes.
And so just it gives them a sense of, oh. And then we start pointing out, like, all of the different realms of authority. I can't drive the speed I want to down the road because I have to obey the laws of the land.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't, there are very real consequences. If Dad doesn't go to work, there are real consequences. He's under authority. And so helping our kids even understand that we're under authority, that everybody is helpful.
Right. Yeah. Now, what do you do about things like the negative media messages that a lot of kids get? Well, probably most kids, anybody who encounters media gets this. But you have a lot of TV shows. I often hear parents complaining about TV shows where Dad is made to look like a fool and Mom is made to look clueless and these sorts of things. How do you manage the images that your boys may take in that counter what you're trying to teach them at home? Because I think this is something that all parents wrestle with to some extent.
Right. It means that we need to be mindful media consumers. And we need to take a look at the media that's coming into our home and go beyond just what is it rated and am I comfortable with my kids seeing violence or sex or,
yes,
or hearing profanity. It goes so much deeper than that. And so we need to look at what are the messages that our kids are hearing and how often are they hearing it. And so we have not vilified movies like The Lego Movie or Frozen or Tangled, our three movies that come to mind. Our kids have watched them, but we choose not to buy them.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Sure, of course.
So we don't, you know, we'll watch it and we'll talk about it.
Right.
Now, what did you think about this guy? And what did you like about him? What maybe did you not like about him? And so we'll sort of point out things that maybe concern us. Like, gosh, I wish they didn't portray the dad in this show like this. It's, you know, why do you think this is not an accurate portrayal of a father?
Okay.
And so we'll use these as opportunities to talk to our kids. So we're trying to, on one hand, help them develop discernment and recognize that everything we listen to and everything we read is sending a message. But then we also look to limit those things. And so we go old school, so we watch a lot of older movies, mm-hmm, and shows.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the old Lone Ranger.
Oh, yeah.
Episodes.
Good stuff.
And, I mean, there's just Tonto is amazing, the Lone Ranger is amazing, and then you compare it to the new movie, and you're just going, oh, my goodness, that guy is a buffoon. And Tonto, yep, is just sort of not all there and looks like he's strung out on drugs. That's not the kind of role models we want to give to our sons. And so, yeah, so we're specific and we're strategic. We don't expose our kids to a whole lot of those messages, or we try to limit them, but then we talk about them as well so they can learn to discern what they're encountering.
Well, I think that's a really wise approach, because what you're really doing in your description there, Heather, is you're teaching your boys how to think about things, how to think critically,
yes,
not just to take in an image and accept it as it's presented to you, but to push back a little bit and say, is that right? Is that true? So that's part of building character, too. Now, when you get to the part of the code of chivalry where you're talking about, as you mentioned before, you think of chivalry and you think of how a man treats a woman, you know, put the coat on the puddle and help the woman across and all the rest, which is wonderful. Although we're up in a society now where a lot of women say that's offensive. I don't happen to be one of those women. But how do you navigate those things, especially how you treat girls, when you do have kind of a pushback in the culture where there are women who say, if you treat a woman in an old-fashioned way, that's offensive? Because that can really confuse boys. I've talked to my son about that, and he encounters that sometimes. Some girls like me to hold the door open, some don't. What do I do, Mom? So how do you handle that?
Right. Carefully, because especially when they're young, we want to develop just the right habits. and the right mindset. And so I talked to my boys a lot when they were little. I wanted them to develop healthy relationships with girls. So I pointed out sameness before differences. So I wanted them to recognize that first and foremost, we're all people created in the image of God. So we're people first and foremost, and that we treat other people with dignity and respect.
Yeah.
And so I have made pretty clear boundaries, like we don't do boys versus girls. Girls do not have cooties. You can say, well, maybe we like different things, and that's okay. At which point we also talk about how we're different. And that does tend to be something that our society shies away from. And I really think that's, we're shortchanging ourselves when we do that, because there are differences. And when we learn to recognize them and appreciate them, then we are in a place where we can learn to work together and really play up both of our strengths.
Okay.
And so in our home, we point out, like, I bring things to our family that's different than their father does.
Mm-hmm.
And yet together we're stronger. So we talk through those things. And then we talk about the importance of opening doors and being courteous. And then, yeah, I do sort of prepare them that, you know, if someone's like, oh, no, I don't need that, to not get offended and just sort of step back and say, oh, no need, you know, wasn't trying to offend.
Right.
And just remind them that why are we doing this? We're doing this because you are recognizing that they have value.
Good.
And that once, if you can really internalize that, that heart is going to come through.
Definitely.
Maybe not in the heat of the moment with someone you don't know, but these women are going to pick up that there is a level of respect that you have for them, and they're going to appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely, because this is something that I think women do long for. It might come out in different
yes.
ways with different complaints, but I think every woman shares that. We want to be valued. We want to be treated decently and kindly. And if you meet a man like that, boy, he sure gets a lot of female attention. Women do enjoy that and like
yes.
that. Yeah, that's beautiful. So now when we go to some of these others, certainly it's about speaking truth and being generous. And then you talk about perseverance. You touched on this a little bit before, but what about perseverance do you teach your boys?
Because we're doing this in the idea of the night training, I really try to point that out in the stories we're reading. And so the stories we give our children are so powerful. So we give them good stories. We read biographies. We look at how people persevered through difficulties and challenges and how it was worth it in the long run. So as we're reading stories and they're caught up in the drama of the narrative, occasionally, I try not to do this too much because you don't want to make it didactic and instructive, but I'll just point out that, wow, these people really endured a lot of setbacks and they persevered through it. And so we talk about that, and then we give them real work to do, and we set expectations. And so boys actually do really well. If you lay out, this is what I expect from you, they rise to the occasion.
I agree. I think that that's so true in so many areas. When you do present it to them, then they will rise to the occasion and kind of challenge them, which is going back to what you initially said. They want to be challenged. They want to have that adventure. They want to be able to desire, you know, to seek their purpose and their meaning. And all of this is just so helpful. Well, the name of the book is Knights in Training, 10 Principles for Raising Honorable, Courageous, and Compassionate Boys by Heather Hopton. So good to have you here, Heather. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Take care, and we'll be back. Stay with us. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a nonprofit healthcare sharing ministry that allows you to control and manage your own healthcare and choose any doctor or hospital in the nation. If you're a freedom-loving American looking for contract-free healthcare, call now 855-585-4237 or go to libertyhealthshare.org. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. What a horrible situation in Alexandria, Virginia, and Representative Steve Scalise and the Capitol Hill Police, who were gunned down, not killed, thankfully. Praise the Lord. They were not killed, and Representative Scalise is supposed to be okay, recovering from surgery, which is wonderful. But it's just absolutely amazing to me how quickly it became all about gun control. Actually, it doesn't surprise me at all. Because what is the left going to say to all of this? You have a Bernie Sanders campaign volunteer who travels from Belleville, Illinois, after having a long laundry list of letters to the editor complaining about the Republicans, a Facebook page in which he says it's time to destroy Trump and company and all the rest. It couldn't possibly be because of his leftist views. It couldn't possibly be because he was so progressive and he was whipped up potentially by all that has been going on in the media of late via the left. Kathy Griffin, are you listening? Pick up the Trump head with faux blood all over it and ha ha ha, isn't that a funny joke? And the Shakespeare at the Park, isn't that funny, assassinating Trump? Umpteen times we've seen the left talk about violence, talk about killing Trump, talk about all sorts of harm being done to Trump or Republicans, and we're all supposed to just back away from it and say, no, no real violence will ever come if you talk like that. This is the same crowd that yelled and screamed about Sarah Palin being somehow responsible when Gabby Giffords was shot years ago by some crazy guy who had nothing to do with the Republican Party and never once saw Sarah Palin's sheet that had the target on it. They really did this big stretch, as you'll recall, to try to link Sarah Palin somehow to some deranged gunman. This guy was deranged, but he was also an ideologue. All you have to do is look at all his social media and what he did. He was very active politically. And good for Senator Sanders for coming forward and denouncing it and trying to distance himself from it. He would have to do that regardless. But I think it's time for the left to have to answer for what it does and for what it says. People were actually putting this out on social media hours after this occurred and saying we need to have hearings on the violent left hate groups. And I thought, good luck with that. That'll never happen. But seriously, words are not just words. Words stir people up. If it weren't the case, why would people ever give speeches? Why are people still quoting Martin Luther King Jr. years after his I Have a Dream? Because when people speak in a certain way, it can move people. It can move people to good action and it can move people to bad action. Clearly. So it's just incredible. Now, I want to go to some of the audio here because I think that it is very moving to hear about what happened at this practice for the congressional baseball game. And it's just astounding. I want to play for you first this cut from Representative DeSantis, Ron DeSantis, who talked about potentially encountering this shooter before it occurred. Listen to cut four.
I actually left a little early, probably about a couple minutes before this all happened. And as I was getting into the car with one of my colleagues, Jeff Duncan, there was a guy that walked up to us that was asking whether it was Republicans or Democrats out there. And it was just a little odd. And then he kind of walked towards the area where all this happened. So we've told the police that.
Was he carrying anything?
He was not carrying anything at the time, but from where the shots were, I would think that would have probably been staged because there was no one that was obviously walking around with a rifle at the time.
Okay, that is quite disturbing, obviously, if you were standing there and somebody came up and asked you, Republicans or Democrats? That might be a little bit scary, especially if you're in the public eye, as these men were. And Senator Rand Paul was there. He was able to get to a further away place from the gunman by happenstance or by providence. He described to Fox News what he saw. This is cut one.
I was in the right field batting cage outside of the field. And the first thing we heard was a loud gunshot. And, you know, I grew up in the South, so it wasn't that uncommon to hear like a shotgun go off, a random shotgun. And then we got to thinking, well, gosh, we're not really in the South and we're actually in the city. But then before we could think too much, but nobody really dove for the dirt with the first shot.
Yeah.
The first shot, there was a couple of seconds, but then there was a succession of maybe 5 or 10 shots in a row and people began to drop. Representative Scalise was out at second base, probably about 50 yards from me. But there was in between he and I about a 10-foot fence, so there was no way for me to get to where he was. And it was also sort of a killing field. It was wide open with an AR-15. Then there's probably a burst of 50 to 60 shots.
Why do you say it's an AR-15?
It just people said the sound of it sounded like it, and it did appear that he had a rifle.
Incredible. That must have been so scary. And then Senator Paul describes where he was when the gunman started to shoot. This is cut two.
Representative Scalise goes down. We can see him, but we can't get to him because really nobody could get to him until the gunman was brought down. There's probably 5 or 10 congressmen hunkering down in the first base dugout. The gunman's in the third, behind the third base dugout.
And where was Mr. Scalise's security detail?
They're usually in a black SUV somewhere around the field. And so at this point, the gunman's reloading. There's probably been 50 or 60 shots. We can't really see him that well, but my gut feeling was I've got to decide to stay or run. And at this point, I think he's advancing towards us. People are moving behind different buildings. Most everybody's closer to the gunman than I am. I'm at a distant right. point. But the staffer that made it over the fence, we were trying to decide to stay or go. And at this point, you know, the Capitol Police began returning fire. I do believe that without the Capitol Hill Police, it would have been a massacre.
Wow, that is just incredible to listen to and imagine being in his shoes during that situation. And it was just inspiring, I think, in a way, to hear about Rand Paul and Mo Brooks, who ran to the aid of Representative Scalise. I was quite moved when I saw the picture of Representative Scalise on that stretcher. I don't like seeing that, but I'm so glad that he's alive, and I'm so glad for the bravery of the Capitol Hill Police, because think about this. The left can talk about gun control all they want. The fact that they had guns was what prevented it from becoming a massacre. And you can't get away from that. I don't know how in the world you can maneuver your way around that one basic fact that some good guys having guns saved lives. That's the point we've been trying to make all along. Now, this is Politico talking a little bit more about this shooter, this murderer, James. Well, he's not a murderer. He was a shooter. He didn't kill anybody. James Hodgkinson from Belleville, Illinois. And they report that he had numerous run-ins with the law. He frequently lashed out against President Trump and other Republicans on social media. He was a home inspector arrested on firearms and battery charges in 2006, charges that were later dropped. He was admonished by the local sheriff recently for firing a gun from his property. He also was described by friends as a generous man who, with his wife, had raised several foster children and was active in the community. His path toward the shooting, which injured five, as we know, showed a man with a string of violent outbursts behind him, growing increasingly angry at the political order in recent years. In March, a neighbor complained about gunfire coming from Hodgkinson's property, a rural plot off a gravel road in St. Clair County. The neighbor claimed to have heard 50 shots coming from the woods. The sheriff's office paid him a visit, found his Illinois gun permit in order, and let him off with an admonishment. They warned him it'd be best not to target practice there. They said he was very cooperative. This is from former Representative Jerry Costello. Hodgkinson told the sheriff he would take his practice to a shooting range. In April 2006, Hodgkinson was arrested on firearms and battery charges after he allegedly punched his girlfriend in the face and pulled a 12-gauge shotgun on a witness. This was somebody by the name of Joel Fernandez, who attempted to intervene. According to a sheriff's report, when Fernandez reached the outside porch area, Hodgkinson walked outside with a shotgun and aimed it at his face. Fernandez attempted to get away from the shotgun and was struck in the left side of his head with the wooden stock by Hodgkinson. So some problems there. The incident appeared to involve one of the couple's foster children. Hodgkinson choked the child and dragged her by her hair, according to the sheriff's report. His wife was also charged with domestic battery, and eventually the state dropped the charges. And on New Year's Eve in 1992, Hodgkinson was charged with driving under the influence of alcohol, resisting a police officer, and fleeing to avoid arrest. All charges were dismissed by a judge. Really an upstanding citizen. Wonderful guy. His Facebook account came under attack, as we know, because he had a big picture of Bernie Sanders at the top of the page. And he had some really choice things to say on Facebook, some of which I can't repeat. He did say he wanted to destroy Trump and company. Instead, he was the one destroyed. We're going to come back on Janet Mefford Today. Hi,
Hi, this is Janet Mefford. Has your health care become a burden? Are you worried about being stuck for another year and wondering what your options are? Liberty HealthShare could be the solution to your problem. Open enrollment is here, and it could be your chance to free yourself from insurance. Take this opportunity and join Liberty HealthShare. You can finally be in control and have freedom when it comes to your health care. Liberty HealthShare offers an entirely open network, which means you choose your doctors and you choose your hospitals. Liberty HealthShare offers freedom from insurance, meaning no related tax penalties. To find out how you can easily make the change, call Liberty HealthShare today at 855-585-4237. That's 855-585-4237. Or visit their website at libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org. Or call 855-585-4237.
Do you want to experience a closer relationship with God today? Sometimes growing in intimacy with God can seem out of our reach or something you have to work hard to achieve. Well, the good news is God desires intimacy with you more than you could ever imagine. This is Jeannie Nigro with Unshaken. If you want to grow closer to God, you simply need to think what He thinks and feel what He feels about everything. And that includes other people. It's impossible to experience intimacy with God when you're putting others down, critical of them, or always looking for what's not right about them, because that's not how God sees them. God always desires to bless and restore others. See the people in your life as God sees them. Lift them up, see their potential, and you'll grow closer to Him as a result. For more on how to remain unshaken in a world that's all shook up, go to jeannienigro.com. That's JeanneNigro.com. That's JeannieNigro.com.
So are we in a new era? Welcome back to Janet Mefford today. Are we in a new era where the rhetoric turns to violence? It really is the case that rhetoric does often precede violence. First, people talk about being violent, and then some people start to do it. And hopefully we will not have copycats. Hopefully we will not have more people like Hodgkinson, the Bernie Sanders campaign volunteer, doing what he did, which was deliberately targeting Republican congressmen and trying to kill them. Now, here's an interesting piece. This was from May. This actually was published at the Daily Caller. Violence and intimidation against Republicans are becoming the new normal. And they say this. In one of the most recent incidents, police in Tennessee charged a woman with felony reckless endangerment for allegedly trying to run Republican Congressman David Kustoff off the road after a town hall. Did you even know about that? I don't think that was widely publicized. The woman, Wendy Wright, was reportedly enraged over Kustoff's support for the American Health Care Act and screamed at the congressman and his aide, striking his car windows and reaching inside the vehicle. Lovely. The same day that Tennessee police charged Wright for reckless endangerment, police in North Dakota escorted an enraged man from another town hall after he became physical with Republican Representative Kevin Cramer over his support for the GOP Obamacare replacement. The man shouted, "Will the rich benefit from if the health care is destroyed? Do the rich get a tax break? Yes or no?" Then he shoved cash down the congressman's collar. "There you go. Take it." That's pretty unnerving. CNN's Poppy Harlow downplayed the incident, saying the man was showing his disgust with Cramer. Get your hands off a congressman. The day before that, a Huffington Post article that showed how to really turn up the heat on elected officials went viral. The author, Michelangelo Signorelli, this is a very well-known homosexual radio host, called on protesters to harass Republicans at dinner, when they're out shopping, and even at home. Societal norms for the basic levels of decency one should afford political opponents, Signorelli argued, no longer apply to liberals. He wrote that it's time to move beyond polite protests within specified boundaries. It's time to escalate the expression of our outrage and our anger in a massive way. Rhetoric matters. And then no elected official should be able to sit down for a nice, quiet meal. You can't go to dinner in a Washington, D.C. eatery, even your own home. Apparently, these leftists say they should be hounded by protesters everywhere, especially in public. And his article has already been shared more than 29,000 times, and this was about a month ago. Political violence has been increasingly common. as left-wing organizations have whipped up mobs against Republicans and supporters of the president. A popular parade in Portland last month was canceled after threats of violence against one of the groups participating, a local Republican group. An email warning parade organizers promised 200 or more protesters would rush into the parade and drag the Republican marchers out if that's what it took to keep them from participating. The email warned, "You've seen how much power we have downtown and that the police cannot stop us from shutting down roads, so please consider your decision wisely." The threat was sent from an email address registered with riseup.net, a group that is open about providing communication and computer resources to allies engaged in struggles against capitalism and other forms of oppression. And it goes on and on. And of course, we saw what happened at Berkeley. We've seen what's happened on these college campuses with Ann Coulter and Milo and all the rest. A North Carolina GOP office was even firebombed a month before the election, and a building adjacent to it was spray painted with graffiti, "Nazi Republicans get out of town or else." It's really disturbing, isn't it? And now you can add to this would-be killer who was able to shoot five people, James T. Hodgkinson of Belleville, Illinois, a Bernie Sanders campaign volunteer. It is very clear that we are seeing this culture go down into a sewer and go down into lawlessness and go down into a place where we don't want our country to go. It is very disconcerting and it's very dangerous. And we need to be in prayer for this nation. We need to be in prayer for the people who are so angry and so wanting to use violence against their political opponents or their ideological enemies as they see it. We have to make sure that this does not metastasize and get any worse than it has. And I certainly hope that the Democratic leadership will do its part. I know what you're thinking. But they do. And I mean, enough is enough. You can't have a country that's enmeshed in any sort of anarchy. And, you know, enough is enough. Kathy Griffin and the assassination of Trump crowd, enough. Enough, enough, enough. It's like the Bush derangement syndrome taken up to times 10. And pray for the president and pray for the vice president, because they're not safe necessarily. And I just am overwhelmingly concerned about people who are trying to be upstanding citizens and trying to work within the system and are now having to worry about things like not being able to practice for a bipartisan baseball game. And that's one of the saddest parts of all. Senator Paul made that point very well. It's really sad because the bipartisan baseball game is one of the fun things that they can do together. You can put aside your political differences and just come together as elected officials and play a nice little good old American game of baseball. And even that now has been ruined. Now they're going to have twice as much security. They're going to have to worry about whether or not they can play out in the open. It's not easy. And I wonder how many people in this country really want to live in a country like that, where we have to worry about our elected officials getting gunned down. It's crazy. Now I want to turn our attention to something that kind of goes with this. And it's a new Barna study that has come out. I have always said that when you have a culture that is going downhill, and even if you have a culture that's going right, the most important thing that we have to do as Christians is to fulfill the Great Commission and to bring the gospel of Jesus Christ to a world that is dark and desperately needs to hear the gospel. And this is a survey on church attendance trends around the country. It's kind of interesting because some of the cities that you would think would be the most church cities are up there. Listen to the top 10. I'll just read the top 10 most church cities. Chattanooga, Tennessee, number one, followed by Salt Lake City. Of course, those aren't Christian churches. Those are Mormon churches. Augusta, Georgia, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Birmingham, Anniston, Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Then number six is Jackson, Mississippi, followed by Paducah, Kentucky, Cape Girardeau, Missouri, Harrisburg, and Mount Vernon, Illinois. That's all one. Followed by Montgomery, Selma, Alabama, then Greenville, New Bern, Washington, North Carolina, and finally, number 10, South Bend, Elkhart, Indiana. Those are the top 10 most church cities. Now, where we really need to turn our attention are to the top 10 most unchurched cities. And no surprise, I don't even have to probably make you guess 10 times. You probably know exactly who's at the top of the list. San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, California, the most unchurched city in America. Well, cities. Second is Reno, Nevada. Third is Springfield, Massachusetts. Number four is Boston, Massachusetts. Number five is Las Vegas, Nevada. Number six is Portland, Auburn, Maine. Number seven is Chico, Redding, California. Number eight, Seattle, Tacoma. Number 9, Orlando, Daytona Beach, Melbourne, Florida. And number 10 is Albany, Schenectady, and Troy, New York. Right where you would think it would be. Right where you think it would be. And I just think it's so important as Christians for us to consider when we want to plant churches. And this has been a long and much discussed topic over the years. When we want to plant churches, maybe we should consider more often figuring out how to plant churches and send Christians to places where they don't have the light of the gospel to the extent that other cities do. And I know this is a mixed bag because for many of us, you want to go to church in a city where you're not going to be odd man out. You would like to be in a more Christian city, not a less Christian city. It's not always possible for people to live in a very Christian city. I have lived in some of the most hostile cities and some of the most friendly cities when it comes to Christianity. But I think so much of the people who are living in these cities. Who will bring the gospel to them? Who will come to them and say, you have a situation that you need to pay attention to, and it's this. We were all born sinners, and because we were born sinners, we sin. But the problem is, when we sin, we are sinning against a holy God who is infinite. And so every sin that we commit against a holy God is of infinite offense to him. And therefore, as Martin Lloyd-Jones once said, you have to have an infinite solution to the problem of sin. You can either have a finite person paying for sin for an infinite period of time, or you can trust in an infinite person who paid for your sin in a finite period of time. But that infinite component is absolutely essential. And so there are two ways through this. Either you can pay for your sin in hell for eternity, or you can trust in Jesus, the God-man who did it for you, who will give you joy and peace and eternal life and meaning and purpose and love and forgiveness and redemption. I really do look at some of these people and I think, why in the world would you not want to be with Jesus? Why would you not want to accept him? Why would you not want to bow down before him and thank him? We need to pray for these people and pray for these areas that are so dark. It's a great commission we have. Thank you so much for being with us here on Janet Mefford today. We are out of time. Lord willing, we'll be back again with you next time right here. God bless.